Welcome to the Cancer Care Connect workshop. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. During the workshop, you will hear from our panel of expert speakers. We will allow time for questions and comments following the presentation. Instructions will be given at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the workshop, please press star then zero on your touchtone telephone. As a reminder, this workshop is being recorded. I would like to introduce your moderator for today's workshop, Dr. Carolyn Messner, Senior Director of Education and Training at Cancer Care. Please go ahead.
Well, thank you so much, Rob. And I, too, would like to welcome everyone to the Cancer Care Connect workshop, Understanding Treatment-Related Skin Toxicity, Practical Tips to Cope with Rash, Dry, Itchy, Peeling Skin, and Nail Changes. Today's program is supported by an educational grant from Johnson & Johnson Healthcare Systems, Inc., and I really want to thank them for their support of today's program. Now, before we begin, I just want to let you know that there are over 163 participants on the call today, and you come mostly from the United States, from both urban, rural, suburban, and frontier communities, and we also have a number of international participants from Afghanistan, Canada, Philippines, Poland, Uganda, and United Kingdom. So it is a global call as well, and it's a credit to each of you that you've chosen to spend this next hour with us. And this is a very important topic, and it's actually a topic that we have not offered before, so we are very delighted to be able to offer this topic. It's an important one. And now it is my great pleasure to introduce our first speaker, Dr. Alireza Ahmed Alou. And Dr. Alou is Associate Professor of Dermatology, Zucker School of Medicine at Hofstra Northwell, Director Program in Cutaneous Chemotoxicities, Northwell R.J. Zuckerberg Cancer Center. And Dr. Alou will be addressing skin toxicity, how cancer treatments affect your skin, the multidisciplinary approach to managing skin changes and irritation, practical tips to manage rash, dry, itchy, peeling skin and nail changes, and sun safety tips during cancer treatments, and when to call your healthcare team about skin toxicity. It's now my great pleasure to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Dr. Alou.
Thanks so much, Dr. Messner. As mentioned, my name is Alireza Alou. I'm a sort of cancer dermatologist at Northwell Health in Long Island, New York. And I want to thank you again for inviting me to participate in this incredibly valuable workshop. I have been doing onco-dermatology now for the last 10 years here, and really excited about the field, primarily because of the impact that it's made on the care of the cancer patient. So we're living in a renaissance now as it relates to cancer therapy, and we have an array of different anti-cancer therapies that have really resulted in improved survival across most cancers. But it's important to understand that these treatments are often tempered by a variety of side effects that can affect many organ systems. And today I'm going to primarily talk to you about the skin because dermatologic adverse events are incredibly frequent and much more common in the era of targeted cancer treatment and immunotherapy, and often are very persistent, have a negative impact on quality of life, and sometimes can lead to unnecessary discontinuation of anti-cancer therapy, which again, often can be life-saving. So I think what's challenging is that, you know, in the past, there were few resources to kind of get patients plugged into an appropriate dermatologist who could take care of these types of rashes. But now, fortunately, there's a growing number of dermatologists at academic institutions who have this unique expertise in taking care of patients who are undergoing cancer treatment. And more oncologists now are aware of the role that we can play in caring for patients. So I would just say that in the context of thinking about how cancer treatments can affect the skin, they can affect them in a multitude of ways, whether it's rash, itching, skin pain, and all of these things can be appropriately intervened upon by an experienced dermatologist. And I think this lends itself to the next discussion, primarily about how important it is to have a great care team that is involved in the care of an oncologic patient. So where I practice, we often work directly with the oncologists and actually see patients at the cancer center with them, so that if there's any sort of immediate concerns as it relates to, you know, the care of a patient, let's say in the treatment room or across their cancer therapy, we can sort of work with the oncologist directly in the office to either modify their treatment or to sort of update them accordingly as to how we're going to manage their skin in the context of their ongoing cancer treatment. I would also say that this multidisciplinary approach exists even outside of dermatology. I think a lot of academic centers now have great clinics where they, you know, will involve ophthalmologists for ocular side effects, GI doctors for GI side effects, you know, cardiologists, et cetera. And I think taken together, we have really, really worked to sort of advance this field of toxicity care across cancer. So again, I think doing this and doing it in a place where you have experts who are aware of the possible treatment-related side effects is very, very important. I think when it comes down to thinking about, you know, how we sort of will manage these types of skin rashes and toxicities, I think a lot of it is related to the specific, you know, types of side effects that we do see, because certain cancer treatments have very specific skin side effects that have to be managed or can be managed in a very unique way, while some of the more broad you know, general chemotherapies typically have some non-specific side effects that we typically can give some broader recommendations to. So I'll speak to some of those broader recommendations as it relates to practical tips. You know, I always will tell my patients that chemotherapy typically, and cancer therapy in general, just really affects the skin barrier, primarily making it more fragile and vulnerable. And I think that fragility and vulnerability is what makes people more apt to sort of break out in their skin. So I think in general, we will really recommend the use of bland moisturizers, so moisturizing creams that patients should use once to twice a day while they're undergoing treatment, just to keep their skin barrier intact. And then, you know, to sort of go along with that, we also recommend patients use just very bland products on their skin, whether it's cleansers, shampoos, free and clear detergents. All of these together really help with maintaining the skin barrier and preventing vulnerability in the skin. I think the next thing that we often will recommend to our patients is also just about sun protection you know, sunscreen use, because a lot of cancer therapies will make you more sensitive to the sun. So while it may not be a big problem in the winter months, it often can rear its head in the summer. So being good about your sunscreen, you know, we recommend reapplying an SPF 30 sunscreen every 2 hours if you know you're going to be out for that period of time. Or if you're not a sunscreen person, wearing sun protective clothing like a hat, UPF shirts, things really, really go a long way in sort of keeping and maintaining skin health as you're undergoing treatment. And then I think the last area that I think is important is just understanding when to think about engaging in your doctors when you feel like you're undergoing a rash. Now, the timeline for rashes as it relates to the different types of therapies can vary. But I think, you know, the easy answer is whenever you feel like there's something going on in your skin, I think it's important to think about touching base with your oncologist primarily, who then could direct that concern to your dermatologist. Or if you have a good relationship or a long-standing relationship with your dermatologist, it's okay to sort of reach them directly. But because of the sensitive nature of the treatment that patients are often undergoing, we kind of want patients to inform us immediately, just so that it really does not impact ongoing cancer care. Because I think, you know, one of the problems that we've seen before, you know, the field of oncodermatology was started was a lot of patients, unfortunately, had their treatment stopped as a consequence of minor rashes that very easily could have been taken care of, which is some you know, directed skin-directed management. And you can imagine that with some of those breaks in therapy, that can lead to negative impact, negative outcomes. But again, now, fortunately, since, you know, this field of supportive oncodermatology has been established, there's been a lot more, I would say, you know, a better multidisciplinary approach, a better line of communication where we often can work patients through these types of toxicities while maintaining them on their life-saving therapy. So, again, our whole view here is to try to sort of uncouple rash and side effect from the benefit of therapy, while also universally maintaining a great quality of life. So with that, you know, I'll give the mic back over to Dr. Messner, and I'm happy to take any questions at any point at the end of the session.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Alou. That was just a wonderful presentation and really very comprehensive. And I know there'll be questions for you during the Q&A, and this is such an important topic. So thank you so much for being so comprehensive and stellar in your presentation. And because you are the first speaker, you really identified a lot of the issues for patients to be aware of. So thank you so much. And our next speaker is Dr. Stuart Fleischman. Dr. Fleischman is former founding director of Cancer Support Services Continuum Cancer Centers of New York, now part of the Mount Sinai Health System. He is also an author and researcher in oncology. And Dr. Fleischman will be addressing the role of clinical trials, how research increases your treatment options, the importance of communicating with your healthcare team, key questions to ask, quality of life concerns, how to prepare for telehealth, telemedicine appointments, including technology, prepared list of questions, and discussion of open notes. It's my pleasure now to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Dr. Fleischman.
Thank you, Dr. Messner, and thank you for everybody who's on the call investing the time and effort to learn about this. This is a really important topic, and up until recently, as you've heard, it sort of didn't get mainstream attention. Many people over the years, well, it's just my skin, but until there's some problem with the skin, then it's the most important, one of the most important things, and frankly, patients in informal discussion think this is as important or almost as important as hair loss when it comes to being visible about being treated for cancer and identifying themselves, whether voluntarily or not, to the world as somebody who's being treated for cancer. So it's really important. So like just about every other aspect of oncology, when these issues come to the forefront, it brings up many discussions about what we know and what we don't know. Having clinical trials to look at what are the specific issues related to skin toxicity. And as you've heard, good preventive techniques, as well as there are other treatments that can be used. If a skin problem develops during a cancer treatment, postponing the treatment is not just the primary option at this point. Running clinical trials and looking at the specifics may seem somewhat sort of overly detailed oriented to many of many patients and families, but actually it's really important. So it would be just looking at things like, are there standardized scales to look at toxicity? Mild, medium, moderate, severe. What does that exactly mean? Skin is the largest organ of the body we have. It's an important one, and it's, again, a good thing now that it's getting attention. What's the quality of it? Is it red? Is it dry? Is the skin seem to be falling off in layers? Are there blisters? Is there change in the texture? All of these things are very important and need to be quantified. And it's important to help your providers and your cancer treatment team learn about what we can do for the next patient and the next and the next and refine that. And as, again, as you've heard, doing things preventively like sunscreens or moisturizers that really are compatible with cancer treatment and your providers will know what's best to recommend is very important. And then what treatments? Is it things like cold compresses or steroid creams or steroids that are used by mouth or injection? All that is really the discussion between the oncodermatologist and your oncologist and can be very, very helpful. And how much does it interfere with your quality of life? So all of these things really can be subject to clinical trials. Sometimes patients who are treated in academic cancer centers in the United States complain about being overloaded by clinical trials because each aspect of their care may need a different trial, a different set of consents, different research assistants who are contacting you and needing information. But it is crucial to helping both your care and the care of the people who come after you. Dr. Messner also asked me to talk about some of the other innovations in treatment and advances in the way that we actually see patients or communicate with patients. And even before the worldwide COVID pandemic, but since then, we're obviously communicating with people in very different ways. And patients and families are communicating with the providers in very different ways. So one of the things that's happened is technology has really taken a much stronger role, not just telephone calls, but actually office visits via telehealth. In many parts of the world, this has been a vital improvement in the care that they can receive. Because patients can't always get to the providers, especially as the pandemic was waning, and we still know that COVID is a real and present issue in all of our lives, but less so than before. So learning about the technology and using the technology is really important to all of us. So if you're asked or request a telehealth visit, by phone, that's usually easy technology, calling in or receiving a call. But if it's on a device where there's a video connection as well as an audio connection, and you and the provider can see each other, that can be slightly different because it's not handled over regular phone lines. Often you need the special connection via internet or via Wi-Fi. Or by cable in some parts of the world. There's a lot of preparation that needs to go into it. So making sure you have the proper device, making sure the device is charged, learning how to connect. Many times the provider's office will arrange a dry run a little bit before or sometimes a day before to make sure that the connection is easy on both ends so that the call can take its full amount of time rather than using time to fix the technology. Preparing a list of questions is something we have advised for years for our patients. It makes everything so much better when there's a list of questions and in priority. What's the most important? But the one thing that the technology has brought us is the ability to have either a family member or a trusted friend who may not be in the same house, the same city, the same country, actually participate in the call with everybody's agreement. And this can be very helpful when your relatives are distant and concerned about you and are interested and involved with your care, but cannot pick up and travel to another city, state, or country, in fact, for your appointments. So that's been a very big help. Having them involved can be essential, and they can help help guide the questions and maybe make suggestions to you about what the most important questions are. So being prepared, having a list of questions, having the technology all lined up is really, really helpful in making sure that this can occur. But the issue here is really not how the communication occurs, but what. Be prepared to speak about how the your concerns or how you're doing and how you're feeling. The cancer treatment team needs to know. And it's important that both they ask you and that you come prepared to discuss this information. One of the other things that Dr. Messner wanted us to review is the latest trend in something called open notes. That's a general term. Each of the technology platforms sometimes has their own name for this, but what that means is that in addition to being able to have a private and confidential video and audio platform with your providers, you also may be able to see some records that are posted. Sometimes there are chart notes, sometimes there are after a visit in person or online or on the phone has been done. But what this technology has given is the ability to look at test results, x-ray results, blood and urine reports, all the different types of imaging from regular x-rays to CAT scans, MRIs, to PET scan reports. And these are often posted on the information platform even before your provider has a chance to look at it. Cancer is complex, as we all know, and reading these reports is very confusing for people who aren't trained in oncology. Radiologists comment on what they see, not what a biopsy shows. Biopsy reports are getting much more lengthier. There are new summary reports, but again, often confusing to people who aren't trained to read them. Blood test results can be confusing. It's really important to understand that during cancer treatment, many blood tests and urine tests are supposed to be out of the normal range. If they're not, that's something that needs attention from the cancer treatment team. So when you see these reports, please, if you look at them, make sure that if you have a question, that someone from the provider's office actually reviews them with you, because they can look at it on the screen at the same time and help interpret what these mean. Please don't panic over something that seems unusual, or if someone there's a speculation or a recommendation for further care or further testing. That needs to be taken in context. It's really important, especially since the provider's office may not even have had the ability to look at it because it's posted for them at the same time. So when we see the reports, you see the reports, important not to take them out of context. So those are the topics that Dr. Messner asked me to cover today, and I'm going to turn the call back over to Dr. Messner so we leave time for everybody's questions. Thanks again for signing up.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Fleischman. That was just a wonderful presentation and covering a lot of different areas. And I know that there'll be questions for you during the Q&A. And also, I think that the whole discussion of the telehealth, telemedicine appointments is so important. I know there'll be questions about that as well. So thank you so much. As always, just a stellar presentation. And I'm just going to speak very briefly about Cancer Care Services. So Cancer Care is a national organization and provides free programs and services nationally throughout the United States. Our HOPE line, which is an 800 number, 800-813-4673, is staffed by oncology social workers, and many people call the HOPE line throughout the day, and there's always someone to pick up that line. Social workers are put on queue in terms of answering the phone. And so whatever your question might be, it's a good place to ask that question. And also, you can, for many of you, you can visit our website at www.cancercare.org. And the website also lists all the different programs we offer. So let me just quickly go through some of them. And then there's a much more extensive review of all of our programs. So we do offer practical and financial assistance and co-payment assistance. We also offer online support groups for many different populations of people, people with specific types of cancer, caregivers, older adults, younger adults, LGBTQ community members. So on many, many different topics, we have support groups. And they're online. And they're available nationally. And we also offer these workshops, about 70 of them a year. And we offer publications, which you can download from our website, on many different topics, and fact sheets as well. So there's a large array of topics that you can access from Cancer Care. And please do take advantage of all of our free services. And now we're going to move on to the question and answer, the Q&A, questions for our panel of experts. I'm going to ask Rob to explain to you how to queue up for questions.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, we will take questions from the web only. You may submit questions by clicking Ask a Question.
So a question for Dr. Liu. I am a stage 4 kidney cancer patient. I have vitamin D deficiency. How should I practice sun protection and improve vitamin D absorption?
So thanks for that question. That's a great question. What I will say is in the context of vitamin D deficiency, unless there are any significant restrictions to the vitamin D intake, there are a lot of healthier ways or just as healthy ways to get vitamin D other than from sun exposure. So you certainly could speak to your primary doctor, your oncologist, about vitamin D supplementation. But again, I would say you only need really 10 to 15 minutes of unprotected sun exposure daily to get appropriate sun or UV exposure to sort of generate the vitamin D that you would need for a day, So again, other than supplementation and that sort of episodic sun exposure, I think that, maintaining, the sun protective habits that we had discussed earlier are just going to be beneficial to you overall, just because of how frequent and how often we know that skin toxicity can affect, cancer patients who are undergoing specific therapies. So again, I'm not opposed to patients getting some sun exposure, but like everything else, it should be a balance so that we're not compromising, our skin barrier and overall health.
Thank you so much. And Dr. Fleischman, when should I go to the emergency room due to a rash or skin changes?
Oh, good question. Well, depending upon where you're getting treatment, the best thing to do is to call your cancer treatment team first. One of the other advantages of all the technology is your treatment team may actually ask you to send a photo of the problem, and that may actually keep you from going to the emergency room. If there's an emergency either during the evening hours or at night or on weekends or holidays when the office may not be open, Many of the larger cancer centers have infusion centers that are open on those days, and calling them and or your treatment team may be the best way not to go to the emergency room. I'm not anti-emergency room, but this way you can get information directly from cancer specialists rather than the emergency room staff, who may not be as familiar with all the drugs and the side effects in your situation as the treatment team.
Thank you. Question for Dr. Lu. My husband has skin rashes, itching, and eczema, and also dermatitis, and told could have been from having had radiation therapy 1.5 years ago for prostate cancer. How long does this go on? Several years? Is that possible? Dr. Liu, if you could just address this in a general way.
Sure. I think when we think about certain types of cancer therapies, there are, specific timelines that we think about as it relates to, how long it remains in your body. As it relates to radiation therapy is a anti-cancer treatment that often can result in more longer standing effects because, again, given that the radiation is going through the skin, there can be a sort of a more long standing change in the texture and architecture of the skin that can impact a patient more long term. So, if you're affecting the viability of the skin, patients, who get radiation almost always will have that chronic area of fragility because that area was somewhat traumatized by the radiation. So that area will always be a little bit more vulnerable to irritation. So I would say, to that for that person in that area of radiation, it's not uncommon to see, potential vulnerability. But overall, I think it all depends on the type of therapy. And that usually has an effect on how long a potential rash can last. But again, all cancer therapies can affect the barrier in the skin. And that's usually the first line of defense that we have against getting any kind of dermatitis or rash.
Thank you so much. This question for Dr. Fleischman. I live in the desert where humidity is very low. My skin is always flaky and I bruise very easily. I use moisturizing soap and lotion. I try to stay hydrated. How important is hydration?
Hydration is really important in the desert. I live in the desert too, and I really do understand how hot and how dry one can get, especially in the spring, summer, and early fall months. But the real answer here is too much of a good thing may also not be good. So depending upon your situation, your how strong your heart is, your breathing issues, a whole bunch of things in other organs, please just confirm with your cancer treatment team what you should be hydrating with, whether it's plain water or electrolyte drinks or with sugar, without sugar, depending upon if you have diabetes and how often and at what quantities. Because like pretty much everything else in cancer, I know hearing it depends is not always so comforting, but it really needs to be tailor-made and personalized to your situation.
Thank you. Excellent. And so the question for Dr. Alu, what kind of breast cancer treatments cause vitiligo? Are there any medications to prevent it? And if you could describe what vitiligo is.
Yeah, sure. So when we think of vitiligo is a condition where people lose the pigment cells in the skin, and it's often caused by our own immune cells attacking those pigmented cells. So I think when we traditionally think about vitiligo as it relates to anti-cancer therapy, we typically see it more in patients who receive immunotherapy, So there are different types of medicines that your oncologist may choose. And Dr. Fleischman may be able to speak to sort of, you know, where they are in sort of the line of treatment as it relates to breast cancer. But I know that in certain treatment-resistant breast cancers, immunotherapy can be used. And, you know, that can sometimes be associated with vitiligo. I think, you know, addressing the second part of your question as to how you can prevent it, I think that's a little bit harder. And I would say here is where early detection and, you know, self-skin exams are important. So, you know, I also advocate that my cancer patients are sort of, you know, regularly and routinely checking their skin to make sure that they don't have rash. So this would fall under those auspices where one should be looking at their skin and making sure that they're not losing any pigment. But again, I would, just like Dr. Fleischman has said, it'd be one of those things where you always want to make sure that your cancer care team is aware of anything that you're experiencing while you're undergoing treatment.
Excellent, thank you. And did you want to add anything, Dr. Fleischman?
I would add that if you've had vitiligo before treatment, even if it's not very prominent, please, again, on consult time and when before making a decision about chemotherapy, radiation, immunotherapy, make sure your treatment team is aware of that, and maybe you can get a referral in advance to an oncodermatologist who would really be able to investigate this even more. The thing about breast cancer and prostate cancer is part of the treatment is actually endocrine. So that's med speak for hormones, where certain naturally occurring hormones in the body like estrogen and progesterone in women or testosterone in men often need to be, the levels need to be lowered as a help or even as the mainstay of your treatment. That in itself causes a whole bunch of skin changes because estrogen, for example, as we're growing up, is wonderful for our skin and our hands and our nails. And when you lose it, either as a result of menopause or as a result of age or as a result of treatment, there will be changes. So when, especially where there are endocrine therapies involved in your care, discuss that and ask the question to your treatment team about what to expect in your skin as a result of the endocrine therapies. Some of the endocrine therapies can last 5 or 10 years after your chemotherapy and immunotherapy is over. So it's not just the period of time when you're getting all of the treatments at once, but certainly after. There are even some therapies that will actually give recall if you've had radiation at the same time, months to years later. And again, that's really important to review with your treatment team.
Excellent, thank you. And for Dr. Liu, what is the difference between a cream and a lotion? Which is best for dry skin?
Sure. I think that's a phenomenal question. I think one of those things that sometimes is overlooked when thinking about what may be the best moisturizer for you. So I think about these as a ladder. So you know, we talk about there being lotions, creams, and then ointments. As we sort of move into the cream and ointment category, the contents are more oil-based rather than lotion. Lotion is more water-based. So traditionally, lotions are easy to put on, but they are not as moisturizing as creams and ointments because their effect isn't retained on the skin. So again, we traditionally recommend creams and ointments whenever possible. But again, lotion in certain climates can be sufficient. But again, given what the overall effects of anti-cancer therapy can do on the skin, you're always better served using a cream-based moisturizer. And I tell patients, you know, roughly, if you were to go into the pharmacy, anything with a pump bottle is usually a lotion, while anything in a jar or in a tube is typically a cream or an ointment. So you kind of want to avoid the pump bottles if at all possible.
Oh, excellent. Okay, thank you. These are good questions, really great answers. So for Dr. Fleischman, how do you find an oncologist, oncology dermatologist in your area?
Well, ask your oncology team first, because they're the ones who would refer either at their cancer center or in the community or even in a nearby community. They would be the first line of people to ask. In cancer centers that are accredited by the American College of Surgeons Commission on Cancer, or if you're at a National Cancer Institute Community Cancer Program, there is an obligation to know not only who's at your hospital or at your larger institution and facility, but who's in the community as well. So they would be the ones to ask.
Excellent. Thank you. And a question for Dr. Liu, what do I do for neuropathy pain in my hands, and some of my nails are lifting with pain?
So that's a great question. I would say, you know, neuropathy is a little bit more challenging, and as a dermatologist, this is sometimes where we employ the help of your cancer care team or a neurologist. But there are medicines that we use that sometimes target the nerves. Again, there are many, and these are things that you can discuss with your treatment team. But there are medicines like gabapentin or pregabalin that can be used in sort of appropriate doses that can help ease up the pain. As it relates to nail lifting, again, a lot of the things go around what we call symptomatic treatment, because there are treatments that can affect your nails. So we always tell patients, as a conservative measure, you know, making sure that your nail folds are well moisturized with typically Aquaphor, and then periodically, if people have lifting of their nail, sometimes they can be at risk for secondary infections. So sometimes we recommend dilute vinegar soaks, where you put one part white vinegar, one part water, and you can do these soaks, and that often helps with pain and discomfort associated with certain nail changes.
Excellent, thank you. And so for Dr. Fleischman, what over-the-counter products do you recommend for itchy skin?
Oh, again, that really depends upon what your skin situation before treatment and then after. Go to your treatment team. They're the ones who would be able to advise best, because they would know the specifics. In general, what you've heard is that the ones that have the least extra chemicals in them are probably kindest to the skin, but that's just a generality. Ask your team.
Excellent, thank you. And for Dr. Liu, are the side effects of EGFR inhibitors long-term? I recently started one for non-small cell lung cancer, and the skin around my nails started swelling.
So that's a great question. There are a whole host of skin toxicities that we can see with EGFR inhibitors, and the swelling that you're describing around your nail folds is something called a paronychia. The good news is that oftentimes, once patients are taken off of EGFR inhibitors, those types of toxicities are less likely. But again, if you are transitioning, again, it's important to speak to your care team about what you may be transitioning to, if you are transitioning to any subsequent therapy. Because your skin may still be vulnerable, but the good news is that with certain targeted therapies, like EGFR inhibitors, or that based on the type of EGFR inhibitor, sometimes or oftentimes treatment, those toxicities can get better relatively quickly once you're off of treatment. But as mentioned, it's important to kind of do your best preventatively, to ensure that they don't even happen to begin with.
Excellent. Question for Dr. Fleischman. Can peeling nails go on for years from past Taxol 17 years ago? Who can I see my regular dermatologist cannot help me?
Okay, let me defer to Dr. Alou for that answer. I have seen that occur, but I'd be happy to defer to an oncodermatologist who probably has more information about that.
Sure. I'm happy to take that question. So some of the changes from Taxol therapy as it relates to the nails can unfortunately be lifelong. Again, without necessarily seeing your nails, it's hard to say in general, but when people have lifting of their nail plate, which is called onycholysis, we know that it's very challenging for the nail plate, which is the hard part of the nail, to re-adhere to the nail bed, which is the soft part of the skin under the nail. So, again, I would say in general it can be challenging, but more importantly, it may be worthwhile to speak to your care team about seeing an oncodermatologist so that you can get specific recommendations for your case.
And another question to you, Dr. Alou. What can be done to resolve a nail that grows painfully? I've been on chemotherapy for a long time, and I have one nail that I clip, then it painfully grows back.
So, again, as we've discussed, you can get some architectural changes to the nail, and periodically that can lead to what we call like pincer nail deformity, so nails can grow into the skin and lead to pain and secondary infection. So again, depending upon where it is, the nails can either be clipped the right way, or if they're on the feet, we usually enlist the help of our colleagues in podiatry to help. I usually will tell patients, again, this is where the utility of soaks and moisturizer will come into play. So sometimes putting on a little bit of Aquaphor with the Band-Aid overnight in the affected area can sometimes relieve some of the pain. And the better you are about that, some of the skin can soften up. But again, I would say, consulting a dermatologist and coming up with a tailored plan is going to be important.
And then this question.
Can I just add something? Add
yes,
something
please,
that?
Yes.
Sure. Especially during treatment, we all want to feel better about ourselves and do nice things for ourselves. Getting a manicure or a pedicure when there's a nail problem like that, it may not be a good idea. Again, speak with your treatment team first about that. My experience is our oncology nurses are well-versed in both manicures and what's the right time to do it and who should be careful and knowing if blood counts change, if there's a risk of infection or bleeding or stuff like that.
Excellent. Very helpful. See, we have. Oh, this is an interesting question for Dr. Alou. What can I manage? How can I manage nail changes that impact my work? I have to wear boots for work, and they cause a lot of pain sometimes when I wear them for long hours.
So that's a good question. I think in your circumstance, it's going to be important to figure out what exactly the problem is with the nails, and then because there can be so many things that we see. We can see, problems with the nail itself. We can see problems with the skin surrounding the nail. So based on the exact problem, we can figure out specific solutions. I think it's tough to give general advice for that type of question, unfortunately.
And the reality is that all boots are not the same, so there may be also the possibility of getting boots that to talk to your healthcare team about. Is there a place that you can get boots either custom made or, as an ADA accommodation, the workplace may be willing to do that. Maybe,
yeah,
maybe has to do that, actually. Yes.
I had actually seen a patient who had this exact problem a number of years ago. A good podiatric consult, sometimes a larger size boot with an orthotic, you know, with an insert may be of help, but a podiatrist that your cancer treatment team works with would be the first stop, I would think.
Excellent. Okay. Well, these are really great questions. I don't think we've ever had this many questions ever before. Oh, this is a question for Dr. Liu. What can I use to help ease cuticle pain?
That's a great question. I think speaking to some of our other recommendations, I really love just the use of Aquaphor or Vaseline, especially at night. There are these finger sleeves that sometimes people can use, or you can put the medicine on and then wear a cotton glove at night that provides sort of direct moisture to your cuticle and your skin folds, and that often will help. If there is inflammation, again, you can speak to your care team or to your dermatologist about maybe adding a topical anti-inflammatory agent, which may help expedite the healing. But again, in general, I would say just with people who have some cuticles that are damaged or dry as a result of their cancer treatment, some intense bland Aquaphor or Vaseline use goes a long way.
Excellent. And now I'm going to ask our speakers to provide takeaways for our participants. So I'm going to start with Dr. Liu. If you could provide a takeaway from what you hope people will take away from today's program.
Sure. So again, I think it's important to really, really, first and foremost, be aware that a lot of emerging therapies, while they're wonderful, they are associated with treatment side effects, and the most common organ that's affected for targeted treatment and immunotherapy is going to be the skin. So like Dr. Fleischman had mentioned, I think it's very important that before you go into therapy, having a conversation with your care team about any pre-existing skin rashes so that, you know, we can be aware and we can anticipate treatment associated side effects. And then more than anything else, I think prevention is incredibly important. So doing some of the basic day-to-day preventative strategies that I had mentioned, whether it's just good moisturization, using products that are not too scented or fragrance, practicing good sun protective behavior, all of these things go a really long way as it relates to allowing you to tolerate your treatment better. And then the last thing is that if you do develop a toxicity or a side effect or a rash in your skin that you're worried about, like has been already mentioned, please, please, please let your team know, because sometimes there are very, very, basic interventions that we can do to make you feel better and to prevent any treatment delays or put you at risk for other potential problems. So again, I would say, always, when in doubt, communication is always important. And in that regard, I think you'll hold yourself in good stead.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Liu. And Dr. Fleischman?
Yeah, I think there's an old expression in English. I'm not sure how it translates into other language, that a picture is worth a thousand words, and having a picture, both the mental picture and an actual photograph can be very important in communicating with your team, but also remembering some of the things that I mentioned about clinical trials and why they're so important, developing with your team a very specific language, you know, how bad is it? Is it red? Is it white? Is it dry? Is the skin layer falling off? Is there a blister? Is there a change in texture? All of those things can be very helpful, both in describing your situation as well as having them move on to trying to find the proper management and treatment. So I think that's important, speaking to your provider, your providers at the time of consultation, again, about old, pre-existing or skin conditions that you have important. And remembering that technology can be our friend, and that using technology such as telehealth visits and virtual visits with our providers can be very helpful. In addition to that, it is sometimes not so helpful to get lots of information that's hard to understand. If you look at reports from the lab or from imaging or from pathology, and reading those can be scary, please review them with your healthcare team before you panic.
Excellent. Wow. These have been wonderful takeaways, and I also want to thank our speakers for just being phenomenal. I want to thank our participants for really asking so many questions. I don't think we've ever had this many questions asked, and this is a program that we haven't really done before, and because of your response to it, we're going to probably do this program again, because it really has been, it's obviously so important, and all of you have so many questions about this. So I want to thank everybody, but I do want to say something about the Q&A, because there were so many of you, and although we did take a lot of questions today, we unfortunately couldn't take everyone's question. So for those of you whose question we took, I would still suggest that you go back to your treating healthcare team and ask them the question, because remember, they know you the best. They have all your medical records, and that's really important to do. And then for those of you who are in queue and didn't get to ask your question, you've learned a lot today. Take your questions back to your treating healthcare team, and they will, again, they know you the best. They have your records in front of them, and they'll be able to help you address the question that you may have had, that you have, actually. And keep asking your questions until you get them answered. And also, before we conclude the program, I just want to remind everybody that, the hardest time to reach your healthcare team is when it's evenings, weekends, and holidays. Now, we just came through a very high holiday period, but there are holidays coming up still. And always ask your healthcare team when they're available to take one of your questions. That's really important. So you want to find out what number to call evenings, weekends, and holidays. That's really important. And again, I want to thank you all for your participation today, and I want to wish you all a very fine day. Thank you all.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation. This concludes the workshop, and you may now disconnect. Everyone, have a great day.